Live from Liverpool, The Dark Paranormal, Season 4.
Hi everyone, and welcome back to The Dark Paranormal. Firstly, I'd like to say thank you to everyone who reached out regarding last week's episode, 50 Berkeley Square, and well done to everybody who spotted the error. Yes, I referred to Captain Kentfield as Captain Kenwright when he got off the train. I need to hold my hand up and say that was just a complete error on my behalf. I have a friend with the same surname, and clearly the two were just a bit too similar for that particular story. So well done to everyone who spotted that, and sincerely thank you for letting me know. I hope it didn't spoil the narrative too much. So here we are already, the halfway point of Season 5. And today, I'm going to be sharing a tale about arguably what sounds like the most powerful and malevolent deity that's ever featured in one of the dark paranormal stories. I first became aware of this paranormal experience around 5 years ago, and it's stuck with me ever since, and I hope it sticks with you. But before we get onto that, as ever, I need to say a huge thank you to our Patreons. We're building a great little community over on Patreon, and of course, when you sign up to Patreon, not only do you support this show and ensure that it continues, you also get these episodes earlier than anyone else. And if that wasn't enough, you also receive an extra Patreon-only show, Dark Bites, each and every week, even in between seasons. So if you wish to join the Dark Paranormal community on Patreon, head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. So a big heartfelt thank you to our newest members: Angie Mahoney, Kat Praetula, Neil Keating, Jill, Michael Otten, Hannah Ord, Kelly Hobbs, Stein, Matt Bennett, Roylene Gardner, Janice, Charlie Murphy, and Crystal Kelly. Thank you guys, your support means so much. So that's patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. Now, today's true paranormal experience is one that genuinely disturbs me. I think down to the absolute loss of normality that happens exceptionally quickly within the tale. Of course, normally I ask you to suspend your disbelief before embarking on listening to the dark paranormal. Now, not only does that again apply to this episode, but arguably it applies more to this episode than any other episode we've done or will do. I think it's time we just get right to it. So, make yourself comfy, lower the lights, suspend your disbelief, and join me at Hellfire Farm. We begin a long, long time ago. Before planes, before cars, before electricity, before the towns were made or even the streets were laid, before Christianity itself, the Brecon Beacons, Wales, the black mountains climbing into the dark rain clouds above, a vicious wind sweeping around the 9 hooded men who stand in a circle. In the centre, a goat lays shaking on its side, bleeding out from a fresh wound to its neck. The 9 hooded figures raise their hands to the sky in unison. They complete the final chant of the incantation. They fall silent. The only sound, the wind whipping across the grassy tufts at their feet. The goat bleeds its last and stops moving. It is done. It is here. On that spot, 1600 years later, a group, each hidden under a cloak, meet in the barn that now occupies the space. Once a month, when the moon was waning, they would gather here. They would find an animal from a local farm that would likely not be missed, and they would slit its throat on a wooden makeshift altar. They would then kneel with their arms to the sky and finish their incantation. They would keep their heads bowed and their eyes closed until the deity arrived and answered their questions. It was during this council that the group learned that in just days, they would be taken one by one to a body of water known today as Pwyl Irach and drowned for their practices. Pwyl Irach, as any local will tell you, translates to the witch's pool. It's now 1989, and on that spot now stands an idyllic stone farmhouse, resplendent against the backdrop of the ominous Brecon Mountains. For Bill and Liz Rich, this was their remote safe haven that they had been searching for. Their family unit was looking for a firm footing and a new start. Bill's son from his first marriage, Damien, had yet to take to this new family setup, and had yet to take to his new and currently pregnant stepmother, Liz. Bill and Liz both agreed that Healfanog Farm would be the place for new beginnings and new relationships to form. And they would. Just not in the way they imagined. One of the key selling points for Bill was the barn. An up-and-coming artist, Bill had struggled to find studio space in the city. This barn would make the ideal studio, and the surrounding palette of peace and nature would surely only enhance his creative endeavours. Liz was excited at the prospect of caring for the handful of farm animals that came with the property. A handful of sheep and a couple of pigs, they would keep her busy, but not too busy so she could begin preparing for her impending newborn. "I can't believe this space," said Bill, as he stepped into the barn, extending his arms and spinning round with a smile on his face. "Unreal," he said, coming to a stop to face his family. "What do you reckon, Damo?" Damien was stood at the barn door, staring up at the back bedroom window. "Damo," repeated Bill. Damien turned around and pointed to the bedroom. "Is that going to be my bedroom?" he asked. Bill drew a quick map for himself in the air with his finger. Yes, mate, it is. Is that okay?" Damien shrugged. "Doesn't matter what I think," he mumbled, staring intently at the bedroom window. He wasn't sure, but he could have sworn the left-hand side curtain moved, as if someone had been holding it back to look through and then released it. Liz smiled as she looked around. She took a deep breath, and the breath felt clean. Not just due to the country air, but more from a clearing of the anxieties which had plagued them in the last few months. She smiled and pointed through the window. "Aw, look at him," she said as a sheep jumped across the field. "Aw, it's coming this way. Is there anything we can feed it with?" The sheep had moved from a jump into a gallop towards the family. "Christ, he's keen," said Bill. "Is it all right?" said Liz, the smile dropping from her face. The sheep was now just a few metres from the fence. "Look at its eyes. I think it's scared of something," said Liz. "It's not slowing..." The noise was sickening. Bill ran outside and turned the corner to the side of the barn to find the sheep with its head bent in an unnatural way, the impact of hitting the wall at full speed clearly having caused the damage. "It's still alive, the poor thing," said Liz. "Will you..." "I'll do it," said Damien. "No," replied Bill. "Go back inside with your with Liz." Damien marched back into the house in a strop, with Liz giving him some space and then following behind. Bill looked around and found a suitably sized rock, and, arm shaking, raised his right hand. "Sorry about this, mate." However, before his hand could come down, and much to his relief, the sheep stopped moving and its eyes glazed over. Bill gave a sigh of relief, placed his hands on his knees and took a deep breath to compose himself. The short respite was broken with a scream from indoors. "Bill!" came Liz's voice. "Bill, the baby's coming!" The new life now residing at the farm was the epitome of a new beginning. Baby Rebecca, as newborns do, occupied the time, the minds, and the hearts of everyone in the home. For the next 24 months, strange occurrences were treated as just one of those things, such as that season's lambs being born with deformities and needing to be put down by the vet, or the pig that was recently found having apparently gone mad and smashing its skull repeatedly on the side of some heavy machinery. Just one of those things. Piece by piece, the life that Liz and Bill had pictured had, in their blinkered view, begun to take shape. But in reality, the pieces were already starting to break.
£750? That's ridiculous!" shouted Bill angrily down the phone to the electricity company's rep.
"There's no way on earth we've used that much electricity. We're a family of four, not Buckingham Palace," he said, holding the phone in one hand and shaking that quarter's electricity bill in the other.
"Well, you need to send someone out here to have a look, because there's no way I'm paying that. Let me check. Liz, are we in on Friday at 9:30?
Liz was busy feeding Rebecca her lunch, but nodded back to Bill.
"Yeah, go on then, Friday at 9:30 it is."
Bill slammed down the phone.
"That's not right," he said, walking back into the kitchen. £750. The car's not worth that," he joked.
"Calm down, love," Liz replied. "It's clearly a mistake."
"You're damn right it is."
"I know." Bill stood up and rolled up his sleeves. "I'm going to turn everything in the house off and then check the meter. If we then put things back on one at a time, I should be able to see what's using the most electricity," he said, flicking the switches in the kitchen, before heading around the house to do the same. He walked out into the barn where the meter was kept and found it was still spinning round quickly. Something was using the electricity despite every appliance in the home being turned off. "What the hell?" Bill muttered to himself. That Friday at 9:30, the engineer from Swalek Energy arrived.
"Mr. Rich, you've got a query over your bill, I believe," he said as he closed the van door.
"I do. Come with me, I want you to see something," said Bill.
So, as they walked, Bill explained that he turned everything off, yet the meter was still spinning.
"Oh, well, that's impossible, Mr. Rich. It spins when energy is being consumed. If nothing's being used, then no movement. It's cause and effect. You've probably missed something in the house."
And so, the two men do a thorough sweep of the farmhouse. The engineer picked up on one or two plug sockets that hadn't been turned off and gave Bill an "I told you so" smile as he unplugged them. Bill led the way to the meter in the barn and, reaching it first, triumphantly pointed at the wheel, which was still spinning as fast as previous. The engineer clipped some test apparatus to the meter, took a reading, and then stood and folded his arms.
"I'm at a loss here," he said, staring at the meter.
"The wheel spins because a current's being drawn across it, but there's 100% no power being used in that house."
"Something must be dragging the power through," he said, rubbing his chin.
"Well, could it be from another farm, perhaps? Maybe siphoning off our supply?" asked Bill.
"No, that's impossible. You see, it's being drawn in, so something in there is requesting the power from here," he said, pointing at the house and then at the meter.
"So it's broken then. You have to admit that," said Bill, assuming he was on the winning foot.
"Well, I'm afraid not. The test equipment shows no faults. Something in the house is using the..."
A series of small bright white lights bounced around the barn. As they did, the meter ran at double speed. The men, eyes wide with panic, backed into each other as they glanced around at the light show. All in all, it lasted about 10 seconds before stopping as abruptly as it began.
"What in God's name was that?" demanded Bill, as if this was in some way the doing of the engineer. The engineer was in shock.
"I've never seen..."
He glanced down at the meter, noting the huge amount of electricity that had just been used in 10 short seconds.
I've no idea."
The engineer agreed to raise it with head office and left the premises in a hurry. Bill entered the living room to where Liz had a book out and had Rebecca on her knee.
"Now that was the weirdest thing that I've..."
"Shh," said Liz.
"What?"
Bill whispered back.
"Listen," said Liz.
It sounded as if someone wearing hobnail boots was walking across the floorboards upstairs.
"Who's that?" whispered Bill.
"No one's up there," Liz replied with a panicked look. "It's been happening every few minutes whilst you've been out there."
Bill crept slowly upstairs. He went from room to room, but they were all empty. Whatever had caused the footsteps was no longer here.
Let's have a quick break to talk to you about Policy Genius. Now, we all like to put off life insurance talk because it reminds us of our mortality. But life insurance isn't about death, it's about life. It's about ensuring the lives of those you love remain secure and comfortable. And I'm sure many of you will think, well, I'm covered through work or I'm covered through my bank account. But believe me, you want to check those finer details because you may be surprised what you're actually covered for. And this is exactly where Policy Genius come into their own. Yes, we could talk about how Policy Genius is America's leading online insurance marketplace or how their award-winning agents will walk you step by step through the entire process. But the best thing about Policy Genius for me is they don't have a dog in the fight. They're not going to strong-arm you towards one company or another. They've no incentive to do so. Their only incentive is to listen to your needs, scour America's top companies, and find you the best price. For example, with Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that begin at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options even offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. There's a reason why Policy Genius has thousands of five-star reviews on Google and Trustpilot, and you'll find out what it is when you tick life insurance off your to-do list with Policy Genius. So head over to policygenius.com or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quote and see how much you can save. That's policygenius.com.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
That evening, as they lay in bed, Liz asked, "Hey, before we even heard those footsteps, you were already saying something weird had happened. What was it?" In the adrenaline rush of hearing the footsteps, Bill had forgotten about the strange light show in the barn. And so, he told Liz about how the air had felt filled with electricity, how the light seemed to bounce off the walls, and how the meter seemed to have sped up as this all took place. Liz's stomach dropped. "That sounds exactly like what I saw in the pyramid. Remember when we went to the Temple of Horus and I felt faint? The electricity in the air, the white beams hitting the walls, that's exactly what happened to me." Bill, of course, remembered their trip to Egypt. He also remembers Liz being a bit hungover the day they went on an excursion to the bird-headed god's temple, and how, he assumed, the heat had got to her. Bright lights often accompany dizzy spells, he'd thought. But Liz had been adamant that what happened in that tomb was supernatural. She'd tell her friends how she felt like she'd trespassed on sacred ground, how something had targeted her. Although the look on Liz's face right now made him feel uneasy, Bill tried to shut that thought down. "Listen, Liz, I highly doubt an Egyptian god has popped over to steal our electricity," he joked. But Liz sat up in bed, fraught with concern. "No, think about it. The animals, the footsteps, now this." Bill sat back up in bed. "Listen, it's an old house. Creaky floorboards and a knackered electricity supply. That's all, love, don't worry." But Liz did worry, and she had every right. Damien loved his little sister Rebecca. Despite his feelings about how his original family dynamic had changed, and his resentment for all parental figures involved, Rebecca was an innocent. In his eyes, this poor soul had just been flung into a dysfunctional family, and, similar to him, hadn't asked for any of it. So Damien enjoyed afternoons like this, where they would both just play in his room. He liked losing himself in her imagination. Be that pretending to be pirates, prince and princesses, or dinosaurs. But this game was different. Rebecca had waddled over and grabbed his hand, holding her fingers to her lips and leading him to a seat on the floor facing the darkened corner of the room. A wooden chair, which had been here when they moved in, was wedged in that particular corner. "What are we playing?" asked Damien, but Rebecca shot him an angry glance from her cross-legged position. Again, she placed a finger to her lips and loudly shushed him, before turning and smiling again at the chair in the dark corner of the room. Outside, the wind was whipping against the single-pane windows. Clouds had rolled in over the mountains, making the dim room even darker than usual. "Sorry," Rebecca sing-song to the no-one in the corner. Damien felt the hairs on his arms begin to stand on end. "Sorry," Rebecca sang louder, as if someone had told her the first one wasn't enough. Damien tried to focus on the chair as the wind howled, and now smatterings of rain threw themselves at the window with force. The area around the chair appeared to become darker. Darker than the darkness around it. He could no longer see the seat of the chair, just the two sides of its back. As if someone was now sitting in the chair. "Sorry," Rebecca repeated in the background. Damien shot a look at her. She now had her eyes closed and was rocking back and forth. He looked back to the An old woman's face quickly leant out of the darkness, moving at a consistent speed right up to Damien's face.
Ah!
Damien screamed and fell backwards.
What's going on up there?
Shouted Liz from downstairs. Damien looked back to the corner, but the old woman and the darkness had gone. Rebecca tugged his sleeve and then mumbled,
"You should have said sorry."
Bill was worried, financially worried. His work had all but dried up in recent weeks. Commissions he'd verbally agreed were now calling to cancel on him, and the letter he was now reading didn't help. It was a letter from the electricity board. The engineer who had visited the property had filed his report, and no fault was found to exist at Heelfenog Farm. It is my opinion the tenant is using the disputed energy and is therefore liable for the outstanding debt. Bill put his head in his hands. This guy had seen it with his own two eyes. Why had he lied? Probably didn't want to look a fool. Mind you, what did Bill expect the outcome to be? You don't have to pay because it's clearly supernatural. Not likely. But every debt, not just this one, needed to be paid. He could only do what he knew how to do. Work. Bill locked himself away in the studio, working on new pieces, updating the website, lowering the price of his current work that was for sale. Liz could see the toll that this was taking on him. She could see the pain of the creative sacrifices he was making as he tried to move away from the unconventional style, the one which had made him popular in the city, and tried to work on more carbon copy items, the live, love, laugh of its day. More worryingly, though, Bill had started to take an interest in the occult, and also the macabre. One evening, she brought him through some tea, and was shocked at what she found. Bill was known for his bright, exuberant use of colour, but the sketches that lay on the floor, and indeed the canvas he was working on now, were all black and grey, cutting harsh and deep-slashed charcoal lines across dour landscapes, contorted faces looking fearfully up to the sky. And Bill, hands black with paint, wide-eyed and smudging areas of the canvas with his palm. She placed down the cup of tea. "Bill," she said gently. Bill continued to smudge away.
"Bill,
what?" he snapped back. "I've brought you a cup of tea." Bill stopped and rubbed his hands over his face. "Thanks," he said without turning around. Liz cleared her throat. "This needs to stop. I won't be spoken to like that," she exclaimed, before turning round and heading back to the house. With the kids in bed and Bill out of his mind in the studio, Liz made a long drink and sat in the kitchen crying. She didn't know how things had gotten so bad so quick. This house, she thought, maybe this house is the reason. Damien had confided in her that he'd seen an old woman in the corner of the room. He said he knew she would believe him, whereas his dad wouldn't. And she did believe him, because she'd seen her too. Only once, but she'd seen her. She turned around to put some dishes in the sink and dropped one. As she stood with the scooped up fragments, there she was, looking through the small glass window of the front door, standing on the doorstep. Liz had froze. They stood staring at each other for what felt like an eternity before Liz stood on a missed shard, which jabbed her in the foot. She involuntarily glanced down and grabbed at her foot before looking back up. But in that second, she'd gone. Through Liz's tears now, something drew her attention to the living room window. The curtains were shut, and the lights were off in that side of the open planned room. But through the darkness seemed to be... No. Yes. The outline of a man. A man with the head of a bird. Surely this must be a... The noise startled Liz and she looked to see a young man knocking on the back door. She glanced back at the curtain, but now just saw the lines and folds of the drawn curtains. Perhaps it was that way all along, she thought. She wiped her eyes and composed herself to answer the door. Then she paused and caught herself. Why would anyone be knocking here at this time of night? They had no neighbours for miles. They were as isolated as you could get. She looked at the man, and now she noticed he was holding a rag to his head, which was streaming with blood. He pointed behind him, where she could see headlights and smoke. The man started running back towards the car. Putting it all together, Liz realized there'd been an accident. That road could be treacherous at the best of times. Liz panically called 999 and gave the address of the crash, before grabbing what first aid supplies she could find and running out of the back door. It was a fair way across the field to the lonely country road, and the car must have now turned its lights out as she couldn't see its silhouette. Either way, she had a good idea of where it would be, the blind corner at the T-junction. Shortly, blue flashing lights lit up the road. Oh, thank God, she panted as she made it to the wall adjacent to the T-junction. Mrs. Rich, said the police officer. Yes, yes I am, I called you, she said as the officer helped her over the wall. There's no crash, ma'am. Liz brushed herself down and shot a look up and down the road. No, there was a man at my back door, she said, pointing back at the farm. And his car was down here. He was bleeding from the head. She put her hand on her own head, indicating where the rag had been held. The two officers looked at each other. I don't know what to say, Mrs. Rich. We've been up and down here, but there's no crash. No blood. The officer just shrugged. It's only a matter of time, though. There's been about 4 fatalities on this corner in the last 5 years, sadly. The police made sure Liz got home safe, and she thanked them and sent them on their way. She poured a large whiskey and done a quick Google search, the road name plus fatalities. She found a report from 3.5 years ago and began to read. Steve Chapman, 45, fatally injured when his vehicle slid on black ice and slammed into a dry wall. She read on. He was married, 2 kids. Such a waste, she thought. Then, she dropped her drink into her lap and threw the laptop to the side like it was electrified. There, on the screen, was the work photograph of the deceased Steve Chapman, the same man who had just been at her back door an hour before. This was it for Liz. She was leaving. Bill, slipping ever further into despair, refused to go with her. But enough was enough. She packed up the kids and headed to her mother's house. Determined to seek help, Liz made contact with then-celebrity medium Eddie Burks. A flamboyant though sincere man, Eddie sat and listened to each account of terror that Liz and her family had endured. Eddie was deeply concerned that Bill had remained behind and demanded that they travel back with him to the farm to try and resolve this horror once and for all. And so, with Liz's mother looking after the children, Liz and Eddie returned to Heol Fanog Farm. Liz's hand shook as she put the key in the door. It just dawned on her there was a chance Bill had done something to himself. She hadn't thought. She'd been so keen to leave that... The door creaked open. She couldn't believe her eyes. The walls were covered in black daubings, nonsensical words, symbols, drawings of stick men stood around large fires. And there, lying on the floor, was Bill. Alive, but wide-eyed, muttering over and over, "The dead come at night. The dead come at night." Liz took Bill back to her mother's to recover. Eddie, however, said he wanted to stay around and find out exactly what they were facing. From his initial investigation and initial feelings, he said he'd never seen something this powerful before. Liz and an almost recovered Bill arrived back at Hialfanog Farm with Eddie a week later. Eddie stated he believed he'd not only discovered what they were dealing with, but how to defeat it also. Eddie prepared a microphone to record the entire affair. He shown them a large bonfire he'd built out of Bill's maniacal drawings and the occult books Bill had purchased. He explained, "I believe this land is home to a deity so primal, so dark, so powerful, that the Celts conjured it up millennia ago. Beings like this are like attractors. They bring spirits to them. They sit so high up on the food chain and are so damn large that you can't see them. You don't see them. You kind of live within them. That's how you ended up like you did, Bill." Eddie lit the bonfire and asked them to join hands. He began reciting a chant to purify the land, the earth below, and the sky above. As he did so, almost in defiance, books would fly out of the fire towards the faces of the attendees. But Eddie persisted with the ritual. A static charge built up around them. The white light, first seen in Horus's temple and then again in the barn, began swarming, flying around the fire like iridescent mosquitoes. Eddie's voice grew louder and louder until the final words of the ritual were said. With that, the lights all joined together and flew into the microphone set up to record the event. Sparks sent showering out the other end. As that happened, the static feeling fell. The heavy feeling that had built up dispersed. And Eddie declared the ritual was successful. Although the proof of the recording was lost, the battle with the deity of the place, now known as Hellfire Farm, was over. Or so it's thought. I end this week's tale on the line, "or so it's thought," as I genuinely believe that something allegedly that powerful can never truly be contained or destroyed. We don't know who the new owners of Hellfire Farm are. Either the activities stopped, or the family that live there now simply don't want their private life paraded around the press. For those wondering what happened to Rich and Liz, the house was too much for them and their relationship sadly didn't survive. They divorced not long after, and Bill sadly passed away shortly after that. Liz, however, has done quite a bit of media around this particular case. And one thing I didn't broach in my version of the events, that you may see if you research this case online, is some commentary around a belief that at one point Damien became possessed, painting his room red and speaking to both Bill and Liz in a foul way. According to those versions, their belief that he was possessed led to them sending him away to boarding school. For me, though, that's the least believable part of this whole story. A teenager wanting to paint their room a particular colour and being rather off with their parents is just being a teenager. And if it's classed as a sign of possession, I know myself and a few other people who must have been possessed as a teenager. In addition, I'd like to think that if parents of any child believed their child was possessed, the first action wouldn't be to ship them away to school. However, I think that would be the action of parents who'd reached the end of their tether when dealing with a teenager in the height of their teenage angst. That's why I didn't include it in this version of events. Either way,
I hope you've enjoyed today's episode where we've taken a look at Hellfire Farm. I'll be back next week for episode 6, and until then, remember, when you're discussing the paranormal, always leave your disbelief on the coat hook. And I'll see you next time on The Dark Paranormal.